welcome to episode 29, I believe, of the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and a podcaster, and now a podcast producer, which is just a trip, and an all-around functional nerd. And I'm joined by my partner in crime, Mr. John Anilio.
Hey, I'm John. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy. You can get a lot of my music for free over at johnanilio.bandcamp.com. What's the matter?
I forgot to cut my intro for Lou.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. Anyway, you can get a lot of my stuff at johnanilio.com.
I'll send him an email and apologize. Okay.
Would you stop cutting me off? You're cutting me off. You can get a lot of my stuff. Do you want to start over?
No, go ahead. No, go ahead. Do your thing.
All right, you can get a lot of my stuff for free at johnanilio.bandcamp.com, and you can follow me at twitter.com/johnanilio. Today, we have with us our third nerd for today, although I've noticed we've stopped using that term, or we haven't been using it as much, and that's
not
fine.
Not we.
Yeah, I've stopped using it.
Who introduces the guests?
I do, so I guess I forget. But anyway, joining us tonight is
a guy who's wondering what the heck he's gotten himself into.
Yeah, he's like, why did I get on the show? They have these... How did they land these big names? What am I doing here? They don't know what the hell they're doing. And it is of Hugo Award-winning Clark's World, and that is Neil Clark. Say hi, Neil.
Hello.
Neil, why don't you tell us a little bit about what Clark's World is and what you guys do. And, you know, you obviously you've won some awards or nominated for some awards. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are already familiar with you and what Clark's World is. But, you know, maybe you can share and enlighten the rest of our listeners.
Okay. Well, Clark's World's an online magazine. We publish fiction and nonfiction articles, interviews, etc. And we podcast all our short fiction as well. We come out monthly. We do ebook editions. We try to basically make sure that our stories are anywhere someone will read them. So at the end of every year, we also put out an anthology so those people who are afraid of online reading can get it in nice dead tree form.
Awesome. Cool. And, you know, I know we I met Neil for the first time at PhilCon last year, and then we got an opportunity to talk a little bit more at ReaderCon. And, you know, I'm such a fan of that idea of just getting stuff everywhere. I think that's just like such a great strategy to have. Now, did Clark's World always start out doing all those different things, or did you start kind of with one sort of, did you just start with online stuff and then did it work its way into podcasting? How did that sort of process go?
Well, we started out as an online magazine and had the intention of doing the anthology straight from the beginning. That was part of our business model, basically using the books to help fund the online free fiction. Mm-hmm. It was maybe a year and a half in, I can't remember exactly. Then we started adding the podcasts and more recently the ebook editions through Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Direct and stuff like that. I'm a tech person, so I started doing ebook design and naturally started using Clark's World as my practice case. So that's how that got started.
I have a question going back a little bit even further. There seems to always be, and it kind of cracks me up because your name is Neil Clark, but there seems to be like this question over the name. And where that evolved from. And I was just curious, is that based on the classic character Clark W. Griswold by Chevy Chase?
Oh, yes, definitely. No, it's funny. Some of the first reviews we had of Clark's World said something like, the stories were wonderful and all that, but we have no idea what connection this has to Arthur C. Clarke. and it was, you know, just look at the staff listing and you'll see. You know, it's a name that has history to it. That's out of laziness. Actually, I used to run an online bookstore, and it's sort of one of those businesses that just sort of happened. Mm-hmm. And we had a family domain, Clark's World, and so we just put a /books on the end. And the magazine started originally as a piece that was an offshoot of the bookstore. So we And when I closed the bookstore and launched Worm Publishing, I continued the magazine to promote the publishing company.
Gotcha, gotcha. And just out of curiosity, on the online bookstore, I've looked at doing that in the past. I thought about doing that like with comic books and different things. Was that just, I mean, the decision to close that, was that because Clark's World was becoming, you know, a bigger part of your life and the bookstore was kind of not, or you know, what was going on there?
Well, the bookstore was growing and doing okay. It was all run out of my house, and I was spending almost every evening packing. And then we found out that we were expecting another kid, and we needed the room, and it was a tough decision because the business wasn't at the point where I could afford to hire more staff to take on some of the responsibilities of shipping and everything to have more time with the kids. So I decided close it and start publishing because that'll be easier. but in a way, my house is still full of books. I mean, the bookstore still does take orders if long as they're big enough to make it worth my time to pack them. And I just basically go and sell the stuff at conventions as well. So, you know, I'm still clearing that stuff out of my house. And yeah, if anybody wants to start a business and selling science fiction books, I'd be happy to sell you a decent pile of inventory.
Very well. I imagine, you know, running Clark's World magazine is a much more you know, creatively satisfying endeavor rather than just packing books in boxes all night. I would guess.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's pretty rewarding too. You know, being able to publish some stories by authors that I've loved for a while, and new authors that, you know, being able to help get people started there, that's, you know, it's very rewarding. And you know, we get lots of positive feedback, and it's a lot better than all those "where's my order," you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now, you know, let's talk about that a little bit, about, you know, kind of helping to launch maybe the careers of some new authors, and just about you know, authors submitting work, and how does that process go? Obviously, we talked before the podcast, and we can't have a podcast without me or Patrick saying before the podcast, the part that you're not hearing, we talked about it. But anyway, we did talk a little bit about Slush Pile, and, you know, you have some slush readers, and what's sort of the percentage of your, the stories that you do end up publishing that are Slush Pile submissions, and how many do you kind of go about and, I don't know if I would say commission, or just, you know, because I know you get some pretty big name authors there. So I don't know if you're really going out and like really soliciting them, or how you know, what's sort of the balance there?
Well, initially our plan was that we were going to do 50-50 and invite certain authors to submit and have an open slush pile. For me, it's important to have an open slush pile because you want to bring in new talent. You don't want to just recycle the big names and everything. But, you know, at the same time, we want them involved. So it started out 50-50, and it's been slowly sliding as more name authors submit stories to us to more like 60-40. For example, last year we published Spar by Kitch Johnson. And that was our lead story in the issue. And that one came in through the slush pile and eventually won the Nebula Award. So it was kind of fun for us to go through that process. And that was our first award-winning story. And it came in through the slush pile.
I imagine that's very validating of your decision to keep that slush pile. It's like, this is why it's here, because you don't know what's going to come through. So no, that's really now. So what's the, you know, in terms of what do authors who maybe would want to submit, like, now your Hugo award is for semi-prozine. So what does that mean?
We are an SFWA professional market. Which means we pay our authors a professional rate. We pay them 10 cents a word, which is higher than the big three do at this point. And what makes us semi-pro is the fact that I'm not professional. This is what I do on the side. And it's kind of funny, in the World Fantasy Award, we're nominated as non-professional or unprofessional. It depends on how you look at it. And this is something we do on the side. I don't make money off of the magazine. I pay the authors. That's where the money goes first, and then staffing, and I'm the bottom of the totem pole. So I never get money. And in fact, the first year, because the anthology is at the end and that's where our big revenue stream is, so I had to front load a lot of that out of how I front loaded it was sales, selling off the bookstore inventory to help get that started. And we do take donations and other things, but you know, the idea is that we wanted to diversify where we get our money from, because at any time one could fall out. Like donations.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, the current economy, donations are going to be down for any of the magazines that currently take donations as a revenue stream. So we have the anthologies. We sell the ebook editions. We get some Amazon affiliate money. We're talking about doing some advertising now as well.
See, the Amazon thing pisses me off.
Yeah.
Oh, the stupid people of Colorado decided to pass the tax, whatever it was, and so now all the online stuff is taxed, and Amazon pulled out. We can't be Amazon associates here anymore.
Oh, that's too bad. It's not like we're making a huge amount of money off it, but every little bit helps.
Sure. Well, I guess that's Amazon's policy. if the state that you live in passes the online tax, they pull out and they don't offer it anymore.
Hmm. So you're talking about all these different things. Now, would you think of running ads on the podcast version as well, or what's your thoughts on that?
Well, we're thinking about it. I mean, I actually posted an editorial in the current issue asking people their opinions on us doing advertising, because I think personally I hate advertising. It ruins the aesthetic, and the aesthetic in Clark's World has been very important to me. So I've been trying to come up with ways to make it less intrusive. There are some ads on the magazine now, but they're all for books I've published.
Mm-hmm.
Or things that are connected to the magazine in some way. So yeah, now we're looking at spam there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's ads, and Patrick and I have had conversations about this before. And, you know, as I started getting into doing my music online and having it as a blog and all of that, you know, I read a lot of different books and just a lot of different resources about how to go about doing it. And, you know, what the decision that I came to is somewhat similar to yours, Neil, in that I wanted to avoid ads. Not that I think I don't think there's anything wrong with having an ad. I know for me, even though for like the first two years of my site or year and a half of my site, I did not have a product for people to buy. I just was giving away my music and that was it. But I knew at some point I was going to have an album out that people could buy. And that's what I would want people to buy on my, like, I wouldn't want just like someone else's ad on it. It's like, I want, if someone's going to come to my site, I want it to be the stuff that I am. And I think it's more important, instead of in the last podcast that just aired today, we talked a lot about these different kinds of ideas that exist, and about how, you know, you want to have people's trust. And I think people only have so much time in their lives, and if they're just like hit with a million ads, well, it really aesthetically is just disastrous, I think. And I think that's probably a little bit of what you're saying, is that, you know, people's experience is really important. And making a couple of dollars from an ad is not worth, destroying that experience.
Right. And you don't want to give people a reason to leave.
Yes. Well, that too. Yeah, of course. Of course. Well, and there's nothing
more. One of the things that you know, I'm a marketing guy, so I can speak to some of this stuff. One of the things that I think works better when you're looking at advertising is advertising that ties in with whatever form of entertainment you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of far afield, but a good example of that is Mad Men on AMC. I don't know if you've ever watched Mad Men, But in between, you know, when the commercial breaks, they actually have a commercial, which is a couple of guys pretending to be just like the guys in Mad Men, and they're running through a campaign for, like, you know, Best Foods mayonnaise or Mountain Dew or something like that. And it kind of ties right in, and it's amusing. And it keeps you from kind of hitting that fast forward button. Because again, it's part of the experience. It's, you know, if you're listening to a podcast and you're listening to something like Clark's World, and suddenly an ad comes on for a new Subaru, that's not going to be a very good thing, and that's kind of going to annoy people. But if you're listening to Clark's World and an ad comes on for, you know, the new book from Neal Stephenson or something, you know, that's you're already into the science fiction. And now an ad's coming on for something that's going to interest you because it's science fiction. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And if we were a little more organized and had our act together a little bit more, we'd actually be, you know, we did an interview with Jay Lake this month. I should have gone after his publishers and said, hey,
give me an ad for
an interview with Jay.
Exactly.
Would you like to advertise or sponsor the interview or something like that? And, you know, I want to keep the number of ads to a minimum. I want to keep them relevant to science fiction. I'm not going to just open it up.
I agree completely. I don't see that where that is, you know, that's not going against the grain. That's not annoying people with something. You know, that I think that that all falls right in line and would be perfectly acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if anything, I think people would want that. I remember... I used to be a devotee of all the different guitar magazines. And I don't know how many times I'd read an interview with some guitar player, and then, like, there would be an ad for either that album or, like, a guitar or strings or something that particular guitar player, was endorsed by. And I remember as a teenager not, like, making the connection, just thinking, like, oh, wow, that's a coincidence that there's an ad for the strings this guy uses right on the page with this interview. And, of course, like, looking back, it's like, oh, no, that was totally intentional but the thing is, it's like, oh, Jimmy Page uses these kind of strings. Like, maybe I'll check out these kind of strings. So that's okay if it's all, you know, if it's all relevant, it's fine. But I think you just have to be careful with ads.
I don't want to download, you know, a Stormtrooper for Halloween, and 30 seconds into the song, you know, I get an ad from Walmart to go buy candy.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned with songs, because I've heard some people say, like, well, in the songs that I give away, I'll have a 15-second spoken intro where I'll go, like, hey, and make sure you go buy my album. And I'm like, oh, my God. Can you imagine having that in, like, your iPod, and all of a sudden, like, you're listening to all your songs, and then, like, my stupid song comes up and you hear, hey, and you took this for free, so go and buy my album, you cheapskate. Anything worse? I'm sorry. I heard something about that, and I just can't imagine, like, why that would be a good idea at all.
I just flashed on this, John. Your other person voice always reminds me of Comic Book Dude from The Simpsons.
Oh, really? Nice. I'm glad. I'll have to, like, listen back to all of our episodes and see. See about that. But, you know, Neil, one of the other things I wanted to ask you mentioned it in the beginning of the show about the ebook versions that are on the Kindle, and I believe we spoke a little bit about this at ReaderCon. What has been your experience with having your stuff available for the Kindle and I imagine for the other e-readers as well? Have you noticed sort of a difference in the way that people are consuming Clark's World now because of that?
Well, I wouldn't, the Kindle sales and EPUB sales are minor in comparison to our podcast or the readership we get online. The online site trumps them all. We're getting over 20,000 readers a month for the magazine. And that's a big jump from last year, actually. And for the podcast, maybe 4,000. You're talking under 100 for the Kindle and stuff like that. It's an income stream for us. It's more convenient for those people, so it's a win. And it takes me just a little bit of time to do it, so it's worth it to me.
And that's a question I had. You were talking about technology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what sorts of technology are you using to create all these different content forms, essentially?
I'm one of those sort of crackpot web designers. And
we just call those Microsoft people.
No Microsoft products. It was aside from the operating system used in the creation of any of it. No, like the magazine's based on WordPress. I do all the design work in Dreamweaver, and I post code. I turn off the graphic editor because WordPress has this tendency to rewrite what I want it to do. And it's very easy for me to take that data that I've put into WordPress and export it through a program I wrote into an EPUB format that's about 90% complete.
Nice.
And then I just have to do some extra tweaking, and I use Sigil to finish it up, and then I'll convert with another program to Mobi for the Kindle.
I love WordPress. I love it as a platform.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
It really is. And I say that so John DiNardo will hear that and dump TypePad forever.
Oh, my God, you're one of those.
I'm not. He is.
Yeah, SF Signal site is TypePad.
Everything I run is WordPress.
Okay.
Or yeah. Joomla. I do have a couple of Joomla, but not a lot.
Now, so Neil, kind of going forward with Clark's World, where do you see it kind of heading now? Are you going to keep sort of on the same course as you have been? Do you see sort of adding different things, different features, different focus? What's sort of the plan going forward here?
Well, the whole thing that triggered the conversation about advertising in recently was that we wanted to grow and expand, and that requires some additional revenue. So we're looking at, you know, emphasis on adding more fiction, maybe doing more with our podcast, including some nonfiction in our podcast. Just trying new things. That's one of the things that I can't sit still. I have a career of, you know, sit still and you die. my day job's technology and education. And so if you stop trying to look ahead and do new things, you end up out of a job. And the rest of the world has passed you by. And I don't want that to happen with Clark's World. So we're constantly reevaluating, looking at what works, what didn't. And, you know, our big thing is we wanted to be a fiction magazine. We want to do more there. And, you know, the podcast enables some of that. And we know that there's a large audience out there. So we want to make sure that we keep up with that side of things. You know, we're willing to experiment and see what happens. I want to do more with the art. We get a lot of compliments on our covers. And, you know, I would like to be able to do more in that direction, maybe doing features with artists
There's also, I mean, we talked about this with John Picasso. One of my pet peeves has always been, you know, find some great book, some great piece of cover art, and think, boy, wouldn't that be cool as a print, you know, in a frame on my wall, and you can't find it to save your life.
Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to some of our artists, actually, about the possibility of licensing and things. Most of them already have their art for sale somewhere. So I try to, you know, with the cover, we always link back to the artist's gallery or website so that they can either find more by that person or maybe buy something. You know, one of our artists, Serge, and I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but I'm going to guess Julian, who has done four covers for us and is more than happy to work with us on using his art in different things. So we've done some mugs, and the little robot head that's on the logo of the magazine, that's from him. So we now use that for a lot of our promotional purposes too.
I remember Serge. I think he was in Beverly Hills Cop.
You know, what's now you say you go, and I've actually met you a couple times at the various mm-hmm. conventions, and you'll go and you'll set up your books because you do have now. Do you get new books that you sell here too? Because you said like the store is essentially, you know, closed now. But I mean, are you getting new books sometimes as well?
Just the ones I publish.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you just to go back for a second to the artists? Mm-hmm. How does that work? How do you pick an artist? I mean, do they Is there an artist slush pile where people send you art and then you kind of go through it and decide, oh, this guy's kind of cool. Maybe I should contact Serge.
Yeah. Well, I spend a lot of, I'd wander around DeviantArt. What's the other one? CG something. I'm losing the name of it. I wander around these art sites where people post what they've done, and I just look for the ones that appeal to me. One of the things that I set out to do with Clark's World was the cover is a feature. It is not tied to a story. So that frees me to pick really fun stuff and doesn't make me say, okay, well, this month I have to do a story with a robot on it because the story features it. Now, I want to be free to be able to pick the best thing I find that month. Some artists send me, we do have art guidelines, so people can send me stuff. I would say almost all of the artists are people I've gone out and found. So that's how it generally works there.
Have you ever looked at that site, Digital Blasphemy?
No, that's not one I'm familiar with, but I'm going to write it down.
It's not a group. It's a guy. But Boy, he comes up with some awesome, awesome stuff. Digital Blasphemy. Yep. DigitalBlasphemy.com. It's been a while since I've been there, but he's just got some fantastic stuff. And what I like about his website is, and John and anybody else listening, I mean, if you want some really awesome wallpaper just for your computer, this is the place to go, DigitalBlasphemy.com. And what I like about it is he'll put these pictures up, and then he explains all the different things that he used to create it. Like, you know, he'll say, "Oh, I did the rendering in this, and I used this for this, and I was using my Wacom tablet, and I did this, this, and this." And you know, he just kind of explains to you. There's no way in hell you could ever reproduce it,
mm-hmm.
but it's just kind of cool when he, you know, he's walking you through how he did it all.
Very nice. I'm quickly looking at some of these.
See, now I got you hooked.
Yeah, I think in explaining a creative process, Patrick, I think not a very small percentage of people are interested in going that in depth, but the ones that are really into it. So it's like sort of a niche within a niche.
Sure.
You know, it's I think those things, you know, are kind of cool features to see.
And Neil, when you go to his free library, look mm-hmm. at like Fraxis and Harbinger. Ooh, they're so cool. And he's done like 3D animations. So he'll do like whole animations. Anyway, that's a side subject. And yes, John, you're absolutely correct. I'm one of those people that likes that kind of stuff. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I like to see, you know, when he's explaining how he does this stuff. So that's just kind of cool.
Yeah. And that's sort of the concept that I've been thinking about in getting the artist to be more verbal as opposed to just showing their artwork. It'd be nice to work with them a little bit more in that regard. And we're also working with a lot of unknown artists from all over the world. So it gives us a pretty decent perspective on what's happening in the field. Awesome.
Now, you're going to be at World Fantasy, correct?
I think so, yes.
Awesome.
Yeah. Do you have any other conventions that you're going to be at kind of coming up? Because I know you've been at quite a few this year already, but what's sort of your schedule?
I'll be at Capclave the week before World Fantasy, and I will probably be at PhilCon and BossCon.
Capclave, is that in D.C.? Is that where that is?
Yes. Yeah, it's outside of D.C.
Okay.
It's a good one. It's very similar to ReaderCon, but a little smaller. The Vandermeers are a guest of honor, and Connie Willis is the other guest of honor. So it should be a fun time.
Cool. Yeah, I saw that one. I was interested to go to that one. And PhilCon, PhilCon's kind of fairly local. But they don't have a lot of, that's the only problem I don't like. The only thing that I don't like about any of the cons, and even World Fantasy, which is getting closer and closer, is that they really don't post all their information or their schedule until pretty late in the game. So even World Fantasy, which is only a few weeks away, there's no schedule up yet.
They're still talking about the programming. I had an email about it recently, so.
Yeah, we had asked them about, because Patrick and I are both going, and we're like, hey, you know, maybe we'll can we do like a podcast there? Or was they're like, well, you can come. Like,
they're just, yeah.
Oh, you're talking about World Fantasy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
World Fantasy tends to be like that. They're very, so you, the best you could expect is maybe being on one panel unless you're a guest, the guest of honor, of course. But, it seems to be much thinner in programming than something like WorldCon, for example.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fine. It's, you know, and we're just because we were gonna do I went to Balticon and I was on Merle Lafferty's I Should Be Writing podcast, and she did like a live podcast. Now Balticon has like a pretty big new media podcast focus more than a lot of the other cons that I've seen, so that makes sense, and I think that's what Patrick and I were looking to try to do. But I think we're just kind of trying to interview a bunch of people, and you know, anywhere we can sort of grab them, you know, sort of in, you know, the lobby or, you know, hotel rooms or what have you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The joke is, hey, come back to our room. You have both kidneys, right?
exactly. But so I mean, I'm curious about World Fantasy because I've been sort of contacting some of the various authors that I know online that I know are going to be there, and we're just both like, yeah, we'll set something up. Let's wait till the programming's announced so we can see where we're going to be. You know, I hopefully they'll post something. You know,
yeah,
soon,
later. I'm supposed to find David Drake. To set up something, but I'm supposed to find him.
cool.
Yeah, that should be easy.
Yeah, well,
not going to be a lot of people there.
Yeah, I'm really
it's tiny.
Yeah, that's like a now what's World Fantasy compared to like ReaderCon, Neil? If you've been to both, like what should I expect? Because I haven't been to World Fantasy before.
It's a lot bigger. The scale is totally different. Atmosphere. At ReaderCon, you have that nice, you know, small, everybody sort of can fit in one big room. You can't do that at World Fantasy. So you might not even see someone you know. It's quite possible to miss them.
Yeah, well, the whole reason that Patrick and myself and I believe John DiNardo of SF Signal is going to go now as well.
And Karen Burnham.
And Karen Burnham is that, you know, Patrick and I started talking about going a while back, just like real, you know, not any committed way. And we just started looking at the people that are going to be there. And we're like, okay, this is a lot of like really interesting names. And also just like, we've had half of these people on the podcast. We talked to all these people on Twitter. Like, we should really go. Like, there's a lot of people that are going to be there. It's like, it looks like you probably can't walk down the hall or a lobby without bumping into somebody that you know or want to talk to. So it just seems like too good of an opportunity not to go.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
It is a good thing. And, you know, I went to cons in the 80s and dropped out, you know, stopped going for about maybe 10, 12 years and only got back in, you know, maybe 5, 6 years ago. And I never was at a World Fantasy before just a few years ago. And, you know, I was astounded that something could be that good. Mm-hmm. So I had a great time at the two I've been to so far.
Cool. See, I used to hit a lot of creation conventions. Mm-hmm. And boy, they just started rubbing me the wrong way.
There's a segment of fandom that still bothers me. And I've just... Yeah, I think what happened was I waited long enough that more people like me came in. And, you know, you can see some of it, though, in, you know, with the electronic publications and podcasting and how they're being received by different segments of the community. Like when Starship Sofa won mm-hmm. Best Fanzine, mm-hmm. there was a certain segment of the population that screamed bloody murder.
Yeah, we heard a little bit about
that. And they were mean. I mean, just over the top mean. I can understand them being a little bit upset about people lobbying for a win because there's this culture that you don't do that. But to attack them because it was an electronic publication or a podcast was ridiculous. Hmm. And there's that segment of the population that's still out there, and I avoid them.
Well, anyway, all right. So, Neil, so I guess we're, you know, we can, that seems like a pretty decent place to wrap it up. So why don't you tell us, I mean, obviously we talked, you know, a good bit about Clark's World. Why don't you tell us maybe what you have coming up or what's out there now and other things that you might want our listeners to know about.
And okay. And URLs where they can find stuff.
Yes, okay. That too.
Well, the magazine is at clarksworldmagazine.com. That's Clark with an E. And next issue, next month's our 50th issue. So we're trying to figure out if we could do something special for that. And I also run Wyrm Publishing. That's W-Y-R-M Publishing. And we have signed limited editions by Charles Stross, Tobias Bakel. We have a Gene Wolfe novella. Things mainly for collectors. And then we have some trade books like the Realms, which is our annual Clark's World anthology, Unplugged, which is a year's best online fiction anthology, and also our ebook store is located there. Let's see, I'm on Twitter as Clark's World, and Facebook, our fan page is Facebook/Clark's World, and I think that about covers it. I also have a blog on LiveJournal as Clark's World, amazingly enough.
why? Just out of curiosity, why LiveJournal? I actually...
That's where I started.
Oh, okay.
I haven't moved up. I'm probably going to connect a blog to the magazine at the same domain, mm-hmm. but I just haven't gotten around to it yet. My life's been a little chaotic the last 6 months.
Understood. Mm-hmm. I have had LJs before, and I moved away from them in favor of doing my own stuff. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I have a lot of other WordPress-driven sites, and between developing the ebooks and trying to get clients there, and running the publishing company and a full time job, being a dad, and
you're slacking.
Yeah, there's no time.
You're slacking.
And then I do the submission system and trying to help some other magazines get that up and running. So it's you know, it kind of gets crazy.
Very cool. John?
This week I have, just today I released a new song called A Stormtrooper for Halloween. You can get that at Bandcamp. Just go to johnanilio.bandcamp.com, and that, like all my stuff these days, is a pay what you want. So if you are broke, you can get it for free. If you want to give me some money for it, you can give me some money for it. So so please go there and check it out. And I do have to give a gigantic thank you to Patrick for helping out with his Photoshop ninjery and for the artwork.
Welcome.
Thank you. And I have to give really special thanks to Andrew Liptak. Well, first of all, Andrew is the dude in the Stormtrooper armor in that photo. And he promoted the hell out of that song today. And it got up on like the 501st, which is the Stormtrooper, you know, the guys that actually officially go out there and make their armor and do all the charity events and things like that. And so Andrew kind of got that up on their site. So it got a lot of attention from that community today. And I'm very grateful to Andrew for that. So thank you, Andrew, for your tireless plugging of that song today. But for anybody else, if you just like that kind of stuff, it's basically a story song about how I dressed up like a stormtrooper when I was 5 years old for Halloween. And, you know, if you like Star Wars and you like Halloween, and if you like any of my stuff, you'll probably like that song. So check it out. And you can follow me at twitter.com/JohnAnilio. Patrick, what you got going on besides 17,000 podcasts?
Well, actually work has been so crazy. I have a trade show for the day job, and so I have not been doing much online. So really, you know, just the podcasts, Functional Nerds and SF Signal, and of course I'm helping Murr out and doing some producing for I Should Be Writing. I just not much else because of the work at the day job right now. That's going to be over on the 19th, and then hopefully I'll be able to get some stuff out there. I have some posts ready, or like 80% ready for SF Signal and that kind of stuff. So, twitter.com/ATFMB, that's all things from my brain. That's also my blog, atfmb.com. We have functionalnerds.com, where Scott Seeley, also known as 8-Bit Dad, does the occasional nerd news roundup. And I don't know why Twitter isn't tweeting those anymore. I don't know what's going on there. I think all the changes that Twitter's made to their API have foobarred all the Twitter plugins for WordPress. Is what I'm thinking is happening.
Twitter's just been pretty wonky the last couple of days anyway, I've noticed. It's been kind of down at points and not putting in those, like, at reply.
All the replies were gone, yep.
Yeah, so it's been kind of screwy lately.
Yeah, and then they went through and they killed a bunch of robots.
Oh.
And I lost, like, 15 followers in an hour.
Well, they weren't real people, so it doesn't matter.
I know, but then Sam Sykes
Robots are people too. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But then Sam Sykes gained 15 followers. So what the hell? I think he stole them.
Yeah, I think that's totally it. For next week, we have, I believe she pronounced her name, Jame Gates and Erica Holt, who are the editors of the Rigor Amortis anthology that's out right now. So they're going to come and talk about that. I wanted to get them on the show pre-Halloween because it seems like it's a kind of a nice sort of horror slash Halloween themed collection that's out there. So they're going to come and talk about that. And as we said, Patrick and I are going to be at World Fantasy, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to a lot of cool people, including Mr. Neil Clark and amongst others. And so hopefully we'll bank a lot of interviews there and have a good time.
We need to ask DiNardo. He said something about having an SF Signal dinner.
Oh.
I'm wondering if that's just SF Signal people or if we can invite other people.
I don't know. We'll have to see. But anyway, I think that's about it for the week, unless, Patrick, you have anything else you want to say?
Maybe.
All right. Well, make sure you lengthen the podcast by 2 minutes unnecessarily right now.
This is the point where I always go, hold on.
Yeah.
But actually, no, I don't have anything else.
No,
I mean, the only thing I want to say is, you know, I'm now broadcasting from the basement empire of all things from my brain.
Very good. You got it all set up now. That's cool. Good to know. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
White shirt and a store bought mask and a broken water gun within my grasp. My tattered pants were lined with electric tape. It was the greatest costume that was ever. Stormtrooper Halloween. My dad was a ghost, my friend was Wolverine. These memories will surely haunt my dreams tonight.
Wait, why'd the music stop? Why do you think? Go to johnanelio.bandcamp.com, spend a buck, and buy it. Then you can hear the rest of the song.